The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? The City of Exalt, Night, December 15th, 2409, 336 years after Escheaton. Blankets of ice and unrelenting cold winds battered the two judges on guard in the central plaza. They had their collars upturned, rubbing their hands together for any semblance of warmth in the blizzard. Tapered concrete buildings, inlaid with geometric designs, buffeted the wind near the residential and livestock areas, but in the open stretch between the Exalter's mezzanine and the fabrication mills, there was no reprieve. One judge bumped the other with his elbow, gesturing towards a shape in the whiteout. A lone hooded figure approached through the icy haze, plastic cape billowing in the wind behind them like a charcoal sail. The two judges turned to square themselves against the oddity that closed the distance and held onto their wide-brim hats to keep them from flying off their heads. The chronicler, Metatag, stopped a few feet short of the two men and gave a singular nod. The masked entity handed over a package wrapped in oiled cloth. Through the feedback of their amp, they shouted,
"This is the testament!"
and disappeared again in the swirling snow without turning back. The judges unwrapped the splotchy cloth and looked down in wonder at the First One's travel diary, a tome holding his collected experiences, epigrams, and pages full of handwritten paragraphs. It was the words of the First One, the Hammer of the Wastes, the first wandering judge who brought justice to the scattered clanners of Borca. The knowledge of a just life and the testament to his successors collected in tiny, scratchy script on these greasy pages. In the years to come, the book would unite the judges and serve as the foundation upon which they erected the Protectorate's law and order. Soon, every judge in Borca had a copy of the Codex and followed its edicts when separating the innocent from the guilty. Others would analyze the book, interpreting and deciphering the countless fragmentary articles within. Practitioners and theorists arose in time to add and delete passages for their own machinations. But for the time being, the context of these passages, these memes, allowed judges to fight for justice and integrity in correspondence with the first judge's wishes. The City of Justician, mid-morning, 190 years later. It was a beautiful day in the city, a rare summer day without the scorching heat bearing down upon those who walked the streets. In the shoulder-to-shoulder merchant stalls, people traded goods and services as a functioning daily clockwork in the righteous fist of the Protectorate. But then, suddenly, raised voices caused a stir at a scrapper stall in South Brennan.
"Judges! Someone! Come catch this petty scum!"
The apocalyptic magpie, Tuco, raced through the crowded back streets of Brennan, bumping and shoulder-ramming any passerbys unfortunate enough to stand in his way. He rounded a corner and put his hands on his knees, sucking in air to alleviate the stitch in his side from sprinting. He heard heavy footfalls reverberating off of the surrounding dusty brick walls and started off again, heading further north through Brennan into the Stukov Quarter. The magpie's heartbeat pounded in his ears as he bounded off of loose debris and trash strewn about the thin alleyway. Peeking over the rooftops and clotheslines were the open parapets of the old fortress, a relic from decades past, but a terrific hiding spot. Nowadays, little remains of Stukov's former splendor. Only the old fortress is still enthroned in the center of the district, jutting forward like a relic of a time long past, incapable of adapting to the constant modernization of the city surrounding it. Several entrances secured with rusted portcullises lead into the narrow compound. Alleys snake their way up the small hill, over to the watchtowers and battlements. The houses are carved from rough granite and coated with blooming red lichen, with stubborn ivy entangling the brickwork. Three main buildings divide the old fortress and are surrounded by a multitude of adjoining side wings and warehouses. The proprietors of each were in the front of their shops, tending to customers buying tailored clothes, repairing shoes at the cobbler, or updating their favorite cartographer with news on scrapper caches found in the desert. The apocalyptic was breathing harder now, still looking over his shoulder. He shuffled off the main thoroughfare and ducked into a small tannery. The smell of the tannins, oils, and lime water made him sick to his stomach, already queasy from running, but he held his breath anyway, and craned an eye to look through a knothole in the tent pole supports. Only dust devils and the odd Justinian crossed his field of view. "I think I lost her," he thought. He reached inside the satchel lashed to his waist and touched the rigid edges of the E-Cube power bank. He bit his lower lip in satisfaction and cinched the satchel shut again. He relaxed his shoulders a bit and adjusted his disheveled clothes, stepping back out into the daylight, wearing a smug grin. He strode back across the street, headed for a narrow exit in the fortress wall to the west, when he heard a voice that made him freeze in his tracks.
"Tuco, you have too much confidence for a fat and stupid slob. Empty the bag and show me your hands."
Tuco unshouldered the bag with his stolen goods inside and held it out in a gloved hand. He unfastened the rope cord that tied the bag closed and turned it upside down. The metal cube caught a brief shimmer in the daylight as it landed in the sand and rock below.
"Thieving E-cubes for the black market at Flotsam, eh? Looking to cash in on a few nights with some of Hector's girls?"
Tuco swallowed a frog in his throat.
"Listen, Young Bao."
"That's City Judge Young Bao to you, you fucking thief."
"City Judge Young Bao. We've played our cat and mouse game for a while now, and nobody's been hurt. Nobody gets hurt from lightning pockets on occasion, and you've got the goods back. How's about letting me off? I'll be sure to tell the others not to encroach on your patrol route."
The judge walked casually up to the apocalyptic and kicked him behind his neck, causing him to falter. He clenched his fist with rage and whipped around for a strike, judgment be damned.
"You miserable bit—"
But the threat stayed in his mouth, as he now saw the burnished head of a judgment hammer held aloft at his temple, its deadly weight evidenced by the judge's tightened grip on the dark wooden handle.
"You stand accused by eyewitness citizens in South Brennan of breaking Commandment 7. Leave to others what is theirs."
Tuco stayed silent, fuming at being caught.
"Show me your hands, or lose them both, thief,"
she commanded. Tuco shot a murderous glare at Judge Young Bao and ripped a stitched leather glove off of his left hand. Patches of vermilion red and ochre yellow stains on Tuco's knuckles and fingernails were evident even in the bright sunlight. The patches of color were fading across the top of his palm, but the five digits still had bright splotches in between the folds of the skin.
"You jumped back in the game too soon, methinks."
She removed her wide-brimmed hat and used the back of her long sleeve to mop the sweat from her forehead. A short crop of black hair fell to either side of her ears, and she tucked the hair back under the hat, flicking the brim for punctuation. Another judge, a juryman, trotted around the corner, panting heavily.
"Whew! Judge Etta, I finally caught up to you. I think I lost the perp back in Brennan."
She stood up tall, barely winded from the foot chase earlier, and patted her juryman in training, Felic, on the back.
You flushed him right to me, Felix. Well done.
Felix gave a weak salute as he sputtered in the dust. Etta pulled a small leather booklet from her breast pocket and leafed through a few pages before finding the edict she needed to carry out sentencing on the spot.
From the Codex, Commandment 7, Section 2, Article 3 commands that all stolen goods be relinquished to the judges. Judge Etta Youngbell, presiding for the preliminary judgment, para primus inter pares. Pursuant to Article 5, the accused has already been marked for theft and will therefore not be granted clemency. Punctum.
She announced the edict loudly as a small crowd of onlookers had gathered, whispering to each other in awe of the scene.
On your feet, Tuco. I'll be fair and give you a choice to ponder on while you're marching to public castigation. We can break your left hand now. We use it for 3 months in the cleft.
Tuco scowled, but held his tongue.
Felix, bind his hands.
Felix pulled a pair of manacles from underneath his duster and approached Tuco, still on bended knee. In his kneeling stance, Tuco drew a crude shiv from his boot and lashed out at Felix's ribcage as he fiddled with the manacles. The knife tip barely punctures Felix's diaphragm, and he yelps.
Shit!
Etta stands over Tuco with a fierce, twisting grip on his wrist. He drops the knife in the sand and she kicks it aside. Felix puts one hand on his belly and shakily grabs Tuco's empty hands with his other, clasping the metal shackle over his forearm. Etta grabbed him by the collar, yanked him to his feet, and forced him forward.
It's a long march to Uptown Court, Tuco. I'd advise against any further violence against court representatives to make sure you arrive there in one piece.
The gathered crowd gave the judges and their captive a wide berth as they made their way east to the Uptown elevator.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
Steam and smoke vent from open shafts, and tubes hiss violently as steel gears the size of horses and multi-ton counterweights on thick chains rattled in their guides as the Uptown elevator reached its final height, 60 meters above the forecourt below. With a jolt, the platform sets into the docking bay as the gear pins are locked into the teeth for stabilization. Etta, Felix, Tuco, and a mix of 36 other citizens unload from the massive diamond-plated platform. A judge assessor greeted a few of the citizens with a rubber stamp in hand to catalog different types of summons and confirm proof of new citizenship. A pair of chronicler observers, one to count and one to verify, took diligent headcounts of every person getting off of the platform into Calendar Square. Once their tally was complete, they spoke into handset radios clipped next to their source modules. Chain monkeys and ropers ran to and fro, preparing the elevator for descent. A new group of people leaving Uptown boarded the platform, and the safety gates were closed behind them. After a few clearance hand signals to the control cockpit and another sudden jolt, the platform roared to life beneath their feet and slowly sank down out of sight. Midday, Uptown. Etta breathes in air much fresher than the dust-choked atmosphere of downtown. The low cloud cover paints the road to Judgment Alley with fast-moving shade on the way to Judgment Hall. Supreme Judge Arcot's statue, the Colossus, casts a punishing and unyielding gaze on all who cross its path. There's no clamor or excessive noise like below in the forecourt, as everyone in Uptown follows along unquestioningly in the maximum security zone of the judiciary. Past the elevator checkpoint, the whole area teems with movement. Etta spies a platoon of Spitalian Famulancers marching in lockstep from Judgment Hall towards the square with their splayers held high, black banners with the 8-pointed cross fluttering in the wind. Other judges set off from the barracks nearby on horseback and on foot, ready to bring more scum to justice in the pits below. Felic checked his hands for signs of blood flow from the stab wound in his belly.
It didn't penetrate too far, Judge Etta. I should be okay to attend the hearing for this gutter snipe.
I admire your fortitude, Juryman Felic, but I think you're more likely to incur damage from senators and custodians if you get blood on the clean floors of Judgment Hall. I dismiss you to the barracks to get that cleaned and dressed. I will handle this one.
Felic nodded at Etta and broke away, falling in behind several judges already headed toward the barracks. Etta and her charge crossed the long boulevard to Judgment Hall, walking into and out of the tall shadows of Supreme Judge concrete busts lining Judgment Alley. A wide, multifaceted granite and polished stone building sat distinct against the open skyline. Arched panes of stained glass on the second floor took the brutalist edge off of the structure, but the imposing stone entryway greeted every visitor with the old Latin message, Prespera ad astra, or through hardships to the stars. The Latin phrase is the unifying maxim of the cult of judges. It's the one Latin phrase that even low-ranking vagrants must learn on their first day. Amber glass braziers burned brightly at the top of the Judgment Hall staircase, the heat from which radiated far along the staircase for people to stay warm, even in the shade of a cool and crisp evening. Etta marched Tuco through the front corridor to the main reception area, where wood and metal teller windows allowed guests and members of the judiciary to receive assistance from assessors and arbiters. Etta approached an arbiter's window, keeping her gloved hand firmly on the rolls of Tuco's pudgy neck.
Good afternoon, Arbiter Othello. I'm requesting to hold this arrested man for further questioning, as it relates to an apocalyptic E-cube theft ring. Punishment for larceny is forthcoming. Quia quod notam non defluxit. Eyewitnesses have been notated and catalogued for an assessor's seal.
She withdrew slightly crinkled and dirty tan pages from her chest pocket within her coat, and passed them through the window. The arbiter smiled and stamped her pages before placing one in a two-tiered filer by his desk, already filled to the brim with other paperwork, and handing the other back to Etta.
Good, good, good. City Judge Etta, always dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Arbiter Othello gestured to two muscly protectors who filled in the gaps between the windows. They each took an arm of Tuco, who sullenly resigned himself to follow.
However, you may not have time to question him. Your presence has been requested by city official Young Bao in the Office of Locality.
Etta looked up from stowing her remaining papers.
For what reason? I'm on duty now,
she said, huffily stuffing them into her breast pocket.
Well, it is a matter of reassignment, as I understand it.
Etta squeezed the thick leather belt around her waist to adjust her pants.
I suppose I should go now? Will my supervisor be made aware of my absence?
Yes. I delivered the letter to Protector Kant this morning. I thought he would have found you to deliver the news by now, which is why I have the gentle reminder seeing you here.
Maybe I didn't want to be fucking found,
she mumbled under her breath. She straightened her clothes again and turning on her heel to leave.
Thank you, Arbiter Othello. Have a nice day.
She gave a small wave over her shoulder as her leather coat flapped behind her.
On my way, Father. I simply can't wait to be raked over the coals. First for tardiness, and second for whatever else I've failed to accomplish in his eyes. Give me temperance and virtue, Mum.
Etta's footsteps echoed across the main corridor as she walked back to the Uptown Boulevard outside. Like many before her, she passed the vast Judgment Hall mural etched into granite and carefully painted on the interior walls. The imagined utopia depicted the first judge, a shining, central figure pacifying the peoples of the Black Lung, reaching out with leather-bound codex and hammer in hand. Hello, dear listeners. I want to spend a little time here to thank everyone for listening so far and also update you on some new aspects of Echoes of Escheton. First, a massive shout out to all the folks on the Degenesis Discord server who are welcoming, supportive, and stay on topic in the threads. I've gotten a little help from some citizens in the server to make the episodes even better, as you can tell by the new voice talent I have for Etta Youngbao, my friend Lyric. You brought Etta to life, and I hope the dice let her stick around for a while. Next, I'd like to thank Horace the Kid, whose music you heard when Etta caught up with Tuco early in the episode. They're a mega talent, whose work you can check out on their YouTube channel, D&D4D. I can't wait to use more of what they've composed. Last, as always, I'd like to thank Tabletop Audio. The 10-minute ambient tracks give creators like me plenty to work with when mixing and mastering in post-production, and the podcast simply wouldn't be the same without these awesome soundscapes. You can engage with me on social media at my new handle on Twitter, at Echoes of Escheton, or send me some cool stuff at echoesofescheton@gmail.com. That's ECHOESOFESHATON. Behind-the-scenes notes, maps, and gameplay features will be posted at echoesofescheton.wordpress.com. Now, I can't promise I'll update the website as frequently as Twitter, so expect some lean time between episodes. But if you're interested in helping the show, I would love it if you shared Echoes of Escheton with a friend, or leave a rating on iTunes and Spotify to help others find it too. Thank you all, and until next time.